Jean Laporta is the town historian of Claverick. You're also, are you an officer of the Daughters of the American Revolution chapter?
Yes, I am. I am the regent for the Hendrickson chapter.
And the regent is what, for us that don't know, what is a regent in the hierarchy?
Okay, the regent is the lead or head officer and oversees the volunteers, the executive board, and presides at all functions.
Okay. I looked up the DAR, Hendrick Hudson chapter. There's quite a bit of it. The building that you're in was built over maybe more than 200 years ago.
Yes, the date, the accepted date that it was built was 1811. That's the record that we have.
Okay. And when did the Daughters of the American Revolution acquire the building?
The building was gifted to the chapter in 1900.
Okay. And who originally was the owner of the building?
The building, well, the house was built by Robert Jenkins, and he was the third and fifth mayor of the city of Hudson, and the son of one of the founders of this, or the proprietors, founders and proprietors of the city of Hudson, Seth Jenkins.
Okay. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about what goes on at the chapter as far as the what. I know that there's a whole, like, library there, isn't there, and collection?
There is. Well, it's actually the chapter, how shall I say this to make it easy to understand? The chapter owns and oversees the Robert Jenkins House. It's not exactly a separate entity, but in some ways it is. That Robert Jenkins House is a historic property listed on the United States Register of Historic Sites. And that, I think, occurred in 1972. We're in the 1970s at some point. The exact date was 60. But it, since 1900, I'm going to go back a little bit, the tenants of the deed to the chapter by our benefactor were that the chapter would house a library for the people of the city of Hudson, and a museum, and that we would host activities and functions and, you know, social events there that would be open to the wider community. So the chapter did indeed, it does still have a library. It was the only library, in fact, in Hudson until 1959.
And don't a lot of people come for genealogy?
Yes. One of the ways in which you become a member of DAR is to prove that you have an ancestor that served the cause for the American Revolution. And so you identify your patriot. And so that in and of itself makes us a genealogy organization. So we have records on genealogy, and yes, people do come and visit our chapter house, where we have quite a good comprehensive file of records for the area and for and beyond.
Okay, that's great. Can you tell me an ancestor or ancestors of yours that served in the Revolution?
Sure. I mean, I have several, my main ancestor in which I became a member is John Livingston. That would be John Livingston of Oak Hill in the town of Livingston. And he served as an aide-de-camp to the governor for his service. I have several other ancestors that I haven't formally documented, but I could, you know, include those as my ways of becoming a member as well.
I know that you have upstairs, you've had exhibits, and I think you have different collections, don't you?
We do. We are a repository of historic collections and fine art, and those things have been donated to the chapter over the years from people in the area. And so we have a collection of Civil War armaments and other artifacts, including uniforms. We have a really wide array of interesting collections from pottery and glassware, Dutch tiles, beaded work, some Native American items. It's kind of a broad array of the culture of the area, and dates from some of the artifacts date from pre-Revolutionary War and to the present.
But I guess you've been, how long have you been the town historian?
Let's see, it's coming up on 5 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sure you get a lot of queries. I would like to know a little bit, if you could explain, you know, the founding of Claverack, when it was founded, and give our audience a little information about the early history of Claverack.
Well, Claverack is the it's the area between two manors, between Livingston and between the Livingston Manor and the Van Rensselaer Manor, and it was an area that was somewhat difficult to settle. It seemed to be a little too far away from your population centers such as Kingston and Fort Orange or Albany, and so there was quite a incentive to settle there. And originally was settled by Dutch people who purchased their land primarily at the time from the Mohican Indians that had some settlement there. And I say that tentatively because indigenous people tended to travel for hunting and for seasonal reasons, gathering. But they did claim some roots in the town, in what we call now the, let's see, it was officially incorporated in by an act of the New York State Legislature in 1785, I believe, was the official, following the Revolutionary War, of course, when we became a nation. And let's see, what else can I tell you? Hudson was removed from the town of Claverack. Let me back up a little bit. Town of Claverack included all of the property from the Hudson River to the Massachusetts border. And that was sort of a movable border at the time. People weren't quite sure where it ended there on its eastern edge. It included the town of Ghent, city of Hudson, Hillsdale was removed from Claverack. So all those were removed from Claverack because it was considered to be too much of a landmass to be manageable. And well, let's see, what else can I tell you quickly about that? Okay, go ahead and ask me some more questions.
Maybe you could tell us, what was Claverack, once it became established in the borders that we have today, what type of, was it a farming area, orchards? Did it have any industry, businesses in
mm-hmm.
the village?
Okay. Sure. Well, it was, of course, a primarily agricultural area, but that's not to say that there was an industry. There certainly was. It has an abundance of freely flowing creeks. on which many, many mills were erected. And those mills produced, mills were necessary initially because people needed, say, lumber milled, and they needed their grain managed for, to make flour and, you know, manageable things to live and to build their homes. But the excess products, they could then turn into, you know, saleable goods, which they did do. So as you, you know, the listeners may know that the town of Philmont is particularly known for its mill that had many because of the water supply there. And those mills date back into the very early 1700s. There's evidence there that some of the first mills were built in Philmont by the Van Rensselaer family, in fact. It became quite industrialized and served markets, you know, well beyond the local area. They made use of the Hudson River traffic to take goods to New York City and, you know, beyond.
Is Philmont in the town of Claverick?
It is.
Okay, so, yeah, I know Philmont. It has... By the pond, when I came, it looked like there was this big mill still standing, this big brick. I don't know if that was the last one. I know there was a fire that destroyed some and.
Right.
And were they clothing factories or?
There was a variety of things. Clothing was part of it, yes, but they made many other things. There were, lumber.
Oh.
Carpeting. Just thinking of all the things.
Was there something called the Red Mill? Was there a mill that existed into the 20th century? I've seen it, and it looked like it was even in the 50s. It was there.
It was the Red Mill. That's actually in the town of Claverick on Route 23.
Oh.
It's the mill that you see when you leave the hamlet after the Van Rensselaer Manor. Manor house is on the left.
Okay.
And so the mill is on that property. And yes, it was a grain mill. They processed corn and wheat.
Oh.
And I think it closed, may I say, 1963?
Oh, Jean.
I don't have that information right in front of me at the moment.
I saw something, and here's a new issue, is the Shaw Bridge, which I've been on. I've seen the Shaw Bridge that it was an article last year that trying to restore it so that pedestrians can go across it. Is that still in the works? Because I've been over there and seen it.
Sure. Yes, it is very much in the works. It's hoped that work will begin on it soon. The committee has been, you know, really diligently working for at least 5 years to reopen that.
Because you mentioned as a girl, you and your father used the bridge to a mill. Where were you going to one of those mills?
Well, actually, you're right. And it was a noisy little bridge. I'm sure it was certainly very safe. The foundation is still there, and engineers have looked at it and crawled all over it and said it's so sturdy. It needs the decking repaired and some of the brace work to be repaired. But anyway, the point is that bridge was meant to last. And although driving over it as a kid, it was scary. It was bumpity, bumpity, bump. But one lane bridge. And we went up Vanwick Lane with the little pickup truck to the Red Mill that I just mentioned, where my dad had corn processed for. It was primarily he did, you know, for cow food.
Yeah.
And I believe he took rye there. I recall rye. So they would grind it into feed.
Where was your farm?
The farm that I grew up on was on 9H South, across from the Stone Mill School, which is still there. And let me see, across from Spook Rock Road.
Okay.
Enters there.
Because there was a market that was open to a few years ago, the Claveret Market. That was a little grocery store, and now that's history. But I remember I lived on 9, and I used to go to that market, And see, things have changed radically within, you know, 10 years. You had that little business that's gone now. I don't know if there were other stores near there. That was the one that was I remember seeing.
Well, Cloric Market was in existence for many, many years. The Philly family had it, at least in my lifetime.
Yeah.
The building itself was a barn before that.
Oh.
But it was a very convenient grocery market. And in the hamlet, there was another grocery market was Hickey's that was on Old Lane. And, oh, gosh, there were several. It was very convenient.
Was there a hardware store anywhere? Was there a hardware or anything out there?
I don't want to say.
Or other retail businesses? Was there... There was a gentleman called Norman Merritt, and he said he had there was some business. He worked someplace in there. I don't know where.
Mm-hmm. Well, there were other stores.
Yeah.
And, in fact, the 9H and 23 intersection,
yeah.
There was a house where the gas station is now.
Yeah.
The house was removed. There was the large house on the corner where Cloric Market was. That was a hotel.
Oh.
There was a blacksmith going east on 23 at one point. So the hamlet was a busy place. Of course, the court was there until it was removed to the city of Hudson. When Hudson formed, the court was taken to the city of Hudson for convenience sake, I think. And then Cloric at that point became more of a residential.
There was an academy there for a while, like a college?
Mm-hmm. Cloric College, sure. It was the Hudson River Institute and Cloric College. It started out in affiliation with the Cloric Dutch Reformed Church.
Mm-hmm.
It was a seminary for young men. And this, by seminary, I mean, it was a comprehensive education, but with the tenets of the Cloric Dutch Reformed Church,
mm-hmm.
or the Dutch Reform. And then it became more comprehensive, and they actually built a college there. So it had programs from kind of like a quasi-military academy to teachers' education, and included women. That college was an interesting and an imposing building. And the building, of course, is now gone, but there is a marker there, New York State Historic Marker. It is at the roadside on the east side of 9H, north of the Cloric Light. You'll see it.
I had a question. On 9H, when it heads toward Fish and Game, is that Cloric? Does that go out that way? Is Cloric over there?
On 9H by Fish and Game, yes.
Yeah, because
sure
there's on the left side, when you're heading that way, there used to be like a fruit stand. It may have been, or orchards. It's
right.
Still
you're
there.
Talking about hoteling. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's in the movie Odds Against Tomorrow. I saw that it passes right by there.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that was actually in the movie. And there's a marker
right.
for 9H in the movie. So the movie captured that, Little Cloric.
Right, right. Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, Cloric extends to, do you know where the Dodge dealer is?
Yes.
At 9H and 66.
Yeah.
From there south to just past where my family's farm was, where I described previously at the entrance of Spook Rock on 9H South,
mm-hmm.
right at the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
The hamlet of Churchtown is included in it.
Oh, wow.
And it extends to Martindale.
Oh.
So Martindale, Churchtown, Philmont.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that covers it.
Wow. Yeah, and the church, the Reformed Church, that must go way back. the Dutch Reformed Church.
Oh, it does. I mean, the current building was erected on that location where we know it now. And the cemetery is there that has so many of the founders and important original settlers of the area. It's worth, scheduling a tour there and taking a look at who's there, because it's sort of like a who's who of early America. Very, very interesting, kind of a walk back in time. And the original Clover Dutch Reformed Church was actually on what was formerly Main Street at the time in the hamlet, somewhere in that vicinity where the school is located now, between the school and the church building that's there. That, building doesn't exist anymore, but that's where it started out.
Well, that's Gene LaPorta, town historian and member of the Hedrick Hudson chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution. I want to thank you so much for all the information you gave. I think this will be really, I think people will really be interested in knowing that about Clavrick and also the DAR chapter. And it shows that this area was, I forgot, Hudson could have been the capital of New York State. It was a close call, maybe. It might have been.
It was, yes. They were discussing that, and Kingston, and then Albany, was the final decision, of course, as it is today.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's good. I mean, if we had been the capital, I think this area would have become like Albany. It wouldn't be this way.
Yeah.
I think they might have taken down a lot of stuff and put all those buildings. You might have lost the history. And Albany lost a whole section to the Empire Plaza. That whole neighborhood disappeared.
It did. Yeah, that's a whole story in itself. It's very interesting.
But maybe it's, in a way, it's good. Maybe that's why Hudson is so attractive for people, because you can come here and see a street practically intact with the buildings on Warren Street and all the other Union. And
very original, yeah. We're fortunate in that.
So is there anything that the chapter is going to hold this spring or the summer, anything that we might know about, look to expect to see, like a collection? Or?
Some of the programs that we have coming up, and if I have a minute, I'll just consult my calendar, and I can let you know what our programs are going to be, because we do have a very active group and of members, and our program chairman is Virginia Martin. She's done a wonderful job over the past 3 years with this. Our benefactor's birthday is March 3rd. Sunday at 1 p.m., we place a wreath at her gravesite in the Cedar Park Cemetery. And on March 25th, we have very interesting program, and it will be open to the public. And that's Tales of the Majestic Hudson. The speaker is Captain Stanley Wilcox. He's the author. He is author and a Coast Guard master. That will be at the Robert Jenkins House. And at 1 p.m. on Monday, March 25th.
Oh,
I think that'll be really
Oh, that should be great. So viewers, listen, that's an event for people to go to on March 25th at 1 o'clock, you said?
Our meeting starts at 1 o'clock. Program starts between, say, 1:30 to 1:45.
Mm-hmm.
We have a little business meeting first, and then our programs always follow. So if anyone from the general public, you're certainly invited to sit in our business meeting and see what we're all about and what we do. And then the meeting and the program follows after that, about 1:30-ish. So.
Well, Gene, thank you so much for the interview for WGXC. And it'll be great. So thank you again. And I appreciate you, your availability today for the interview.
Well, you're very welcome, and thank you for inviting me to speak. And this has been fun.
Okay. All right. Thank you so very much. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.